that I would read to you from a letter from Paramahansa Yogananda to Mother, dated November 17th, 1949. To Mildred Hamilton, Dear Ones, words fail to describe how my spirit and the spirit of the Masters are rejoicing for your opening of the SRF Center. As spiritual you are, this is the fulfillment of a long-waiting wish of God and the Masters. When family members work for God's greater family with the same interest as their own family, then they learn to expand spiritually and ultimately attain emancipation. Family duties are only a lesson and practice in fulfilling divine duties for greater divine family of God and Gurus. I rejoice now, after your dutiful fulfilling your family duties, you are, excuse me, I'm trying to read his writing here, it's handwritten, are working for God and his greater family. Please give my blessings to all the new brothers and sisters of the new order, of new dispensation, of SRF, to unite Christianity, Hindu yoga, and essence of all religions. All success to you. The light brought forth must continue to shine as a leading spiritual center. The center is the hive, and your God realization is the honey. May your hive be filled with the ambrosia of God. Signed, Paramahansa Yogananda. This was written by Yogananda, entitled Healing by Intuitive Power. Actually, it wasn't written. It's a transcript of a talk that he gave. As I often tell this story, that in my childhood days, I used to often dream that a tiger had broken my leg, and Mother would come in with a lamp and show me my leg. Then I would laugh afterwards. After Mother did that several nights, whenever the tiger came at night to break my leg, I knew it was a dream, and I wasn't going to be afraid. And that was one of the greatest lessons I realized. And if you realize that this life is a dream of God. Last night, when you slept, there was no consciousness of body or all the troubles you suffered in the body. There is a time for several hours at night when you completely detach yourself from yourself. That shows that you must learn while awake, detach yourself from the body so that the body cannot anymore be a cause of torture. If you knew that you were one with God, disease will not mean a thing, even if God tests you with disease, just as he tested many, many saints. You won't suffer the pain of disease at all. The idea is to remove ignorance from your mind, to realize that you are with God, and no more think of yourself as a human being. You'll be far away from disease. It's the best way. There are other ways, lesser ways. The primeval man, when he was sick, he stopped eating. He learned to fast. Animals never eat when they are sick, but human beings very much like to eat even when they shouldn't. So much is the skill of ignorance. Human beings think, because they are intelligent, that they can get away with anything, but they can't. So many dig their graves with forks and knives. Fasting is one of the very best ways, fasting and cleansing. Anytime you feel that you don't have much appetite, you should stop eating for a day or two, and by fruit juices, get the toxins out of your system. Disease is really nature's way of letting out of poisons which you accumulated through your ignorance. So disease is not a punishment. It is actually nature's way of trying to get rid of it. But if you have so much poison in your body, by the time all the poison is out, your body is dead. That is not nature's fault. That is your fault. Toxins are one of the greatest causes of disease. Everything that you eat, part of it is converted into toxins, and through improper elimination, those toxins remain. You would be surprised. In your colon, there is enough poison to kill you. You carry a rattlesnake with you, and you don't know it. When there is the slightest constipation, remember that is a great danger signal. You are collecting toxins, and when something comes out, a tumor or cancer or something else, you blame nature. So you must remember your disease is caused by the nature of the karmic condition of your body, which you brought from the past. If your body is subject to disease, you must be all the more careful, and you must not say, oh, somebody else does everything, and he gets away with it. He had a better body. He has a body that he derived due to better karma of the past. Therefore, and if you have a better body, that doesn't mean that you should abuse it. Because when your good karma will be worked out, suddenly disease will jump on you. Therefore, it is good to follow dietetic laws. Of course, there are those who talk nothing but lettuce and nuts all day and night. I remember I used to live in the Midwest in a farmhouse with somebody. This man had some intuition. I must say that he had some intuition, and he is always practicing intuition night and day on me. And so I got tired of it. I said, no matter what you have, I'll show you that you haven't real intuition, because you hit and miss. He said, no, every time I have said something, it has come true. I said, just the same, I'll tell you that you haven't scientifically developed it. If you had, you would have much greater power. And you are talking so much, you are an empty vessel. He got very mad. So one day when the door was closed and we were sitting in the parlor, excuse me, and somebody was coming, I asked him who it was. He said it was my uncle. Well, we opened the door, and it was the uncle, and he wasn't expected at all. I did that especially to make a springboard for something else. He was angry, and he said, look here, now you see, don't you know anything about intuition? I said, maybe not, but I know that you are going to get stuck sometime very badly. And another day, it was very cloudy and rainy, and we were sitting there, and I had a premonition. I prayed for the Lord to show him that he was wrong. And there was a terrific knock at the door. I said, who is it? Tell me. My brother from Wisconsin. I said, it's your big brother. I have a little intuition too. And he said, you open the door. I said, no, you open the door. While he was opening the door, I was on the other side of the door, and in comes the farm bull racing. And he stepped lively on one side, you know. What about your intuition now? He was so nonplussed and angry with me. I said, you certainly got your big brother into the parlor. And when he saw me way on the other side, he gave me some concession. He said, how did I make the mistake, and how did you know it wasn't my brother? Well, I didn't say anything, but he humbled himself afterwards. You must be sure of your intuition before you try to treat your disease or some broken bone. Some people are dogmatic. They are afraid to go through reality. That's why they wouldn't take an x-ray. That's foolish. But if you constantly go to the chiropractor, constantly to the doctor, all the time think you have to live by operation, you have to. A law will develop that you will control you. And you will find out that after a little while, the doctor or the chiropractor will say, I have done so much for you. I can't do anything more. Because those all have limitations. And yet they have cured thousands of diseases. They are using God's laws, that's all. When a finger is rotten, it's better to chop it off. It's already gone. Rather than to spread the good into the good part, it is better to cut it off. When there is a little infection, it is all right to put iodine. But you develop your mind that you can. Chemically, from fasting, people gradually learn to use herbs. There are wonderful herb doctors in India. I remember my father had colic pain for at least 20 days. He was passing out. And all the civil surgeons where I was born in India could do nothing. And he came and took the pulse and said, in 2 hours' time, you will be all right. He gave him a little herb and he slept and he never had that trouble. Now you see, there are great herb doctors. And then the chemicals are nothing because the herbs can't be found all the time. So the herbs were dried and extracts made, and then chemicals were made to deal or duel with the toxins in the blood. Chemicals are helpful too. Certain chemicals are very helpful, but to say that the doctor doesn't know anything is foolish. They are trying constantly to discover God's laws, but they are limited. After a little while, they say, we can't do anything else for you. How few chronic diseases can be handled by doctors or anybody. So you see, you have to go back to God again. Then there are mental methods, which, of course, are better. That's why Christian Science grew so strong. That method was originally taught in India. But we don't tell people to all believe in mind. We tell them to be practical. As long as you are eating, why should you say that that is delusion? Some lady who was very intelligent, she went to a healer and the healer started, you have no body. Well, she took it gracefully, and then she said, if you have no body, you have no head. Of course, she had a perfectly good head, and she didn't like it, so she waited. So she at last established, because you have no body, you have no head, you have no headache. And with her, all her might hit the healer on the head. And he said, ouch, why did you produce the bump on my head? She says, because you have no body, you have no head, and if you have no head, how could I produce a bump on it? So the thing is that as long as you have to eat, don't say there is no body. As long as you have to depend on beefsteak and food and vitamins, all kinds of things. Teresa Neumann and others had realized it is not necessary to eat. Teresa Neumann had not eaten 19 years. She can say, we have no body. And those that have realized it also, even though they eat, makes no difference. They can do without eating if they want to. So the thing is this, I have written in the autobiography about a lady who didn't eat for 56 years. Those facts cannot be challenged because they have been investigated by doctors and scientific men. I didn't write just cock and bull stories in the autobiography. The testimony of thousands remained there, and I am standing here to answer to anybody who would contradict. You can live by the Word of God if you depend more and more on mind. But you can't tell to the rank materialist who has to have his 3 meals a day and in between meals, and he has to all the time sustain himself with food. You can't tell all at once that there is no body. In India, we grade it. In India, we gradually concentrate the mind of the materialist away from the body until he depends more on mind, then tell him that the body does not exist. In sleep, the body does not exist. You don't know where the body is. Then why in daytime can't you think of being spirit, just like you were last night? Do you see what I mean? If you meditate on the self with a capital S all the time, that's the way to forget the body. But you are conscious of the body pretty well, and you think that the body needs a few beefsteaks to sustain it. Of course you have a body. Of course people ridicule. The doctors ridicule the mental scientists, and the mental scientists ridicule the doctors. But both have truth. You shouldn't ridicule anyone. There was a lady in Philadelphia. There was a mother that had a son, and this son had a friend who was very sick, and the mother was very staunch scientist. So the son came, and the mother asked, how is your friend? Mother, he is very sick. Oh, she said, you mean he thinks he's very sick. So the very next day he came and he was very worried, and she said, what's the matter? And he said, Mother, my friend is very, very sick. Oh, the mother said, your friend thinks he's very, very sick. The third day the son came and he was very remorseful and quiet. The mother said, how is your friend today? The son said, Mother, he thinks he is dead. He was dead. So the thing is this, I told a Long Beach man he was a mental scientist and he had an infected tooth. I said, you will pay with your life if you don't take it out. No, he said, I believe in God. I said, you don't believe in God. You believe in your own imagination. I said, God is a respecter of truth, and he didn't take the truth, and as a result, his whole body was poisoned, and he died, just by a single tooth. One must be cautious, yet more and more you must depend on mind, and you will see when the time comes that your mind will act as your best medicine. Now, man who has reason, you have to reason with him. Now, my sister had a sore throat and a boil on the throat. She couldn't eat. Sister Nalina. And she came to me. Her husband was a doctor who couldn't do anything, and the pain was going on, and she was starving. She couldn't even swallow liquid. I said, Sister, of course, you can eat anything you want to. Now, I knew that she believed in me. She said, Why? God's power is unlimited, so I reasoned with her. And any part of doctor's help is limited. Come on, I said. I looked at her and I said, or thought so strongly, that she felt her pain gone and she ate a whole dinner. In the evening, when I came back, she was shooting with pain. I said, What did you do? Did you look to see if anything was healed or not? She said, Yes. I looked in the mirror and it was red, and I shrieked with pain. I said, Why did you do that? You shouldn't have done that. So I told her again that she was healed, and I said to forget and give it to God. And she ate a whole dinner again, and she believed me. She never saw her throat, and she never had a relapse. 3 or 4 days later, the whole thing had dried up. The daughter of my secretary, Mona, had her ears filled with pus. Of course, when I am not there in Encinitas, they are allowed to go to the doctor. But the pain was increasing, and the pus was coming out more and more. She came to the kitchen, and many were present there. I can tell you this thing with truthfulness. She said, Will you please heal me? I said, God can heal you. I said, He is unlimited in power. So I hit the ear as hard as I could, like that. The pain went away, and I said, Don't look at your ear anymore. Next day, I saw it, and I was all dried up. There is no pus at all. Your mind controls all 25 million cells in your body contains. If you don't believe in that mind, who is going to help you? Mind is the prime factor. When you are moody, all your cells are moody. When you are happy, all your cells are happy. The circulation is strong. Your heart is beating properly. Remember, when you become morose, the heart becomes slower. The toxins are not being expelled. Your whole body is sick. You do not know how important it is to remain happy all the time. That is the greatest healing factor. Then you can heal by emotion, not imagination. In a boarding house, this is the medical record, I forget the exact name, she had lost her speech for years and years, and there was a fire. Everybody was shouting fire. She was so excited that she shouted fire, and her speech came back. Mind has to have a stimulant. The mental healer must find out whether his patient depends on reason or emotion or will. Accordingly, she should give the treatment. Then it will work. Once a farmer came to me in India. I was sitting in a little hermitage by the canal in Calcutta, and this man started talking to me, and he felt very happy. After 6 o'clock, he suddenly remembered that he hadn't had his opium. Don't think that every Hindu eats opium. There are many who eat here too. So he happened to take pills which would kill 3 or 6 people. So he began to froth, and he said, 6 o'clock is past and I can't buy opium, and he began to froth at the mouth. So I said, Oh, I just remembered. I have a wonderful special brand of opium. He said, Oh, you have saved my life. So he went in and I said, Close your eyes. I said, This is the most wonderful brand of opium that you have ever tasted. So I put a big lump, which looked like opium, and gave him some water. Oh, he said, Oh, thank you. I'm so happy that you healed me by this opium. I said, Would you like to come every evening? I'll save you buying this opium. And every evening for 1 month, I fed him the special brand of opium. He was hale and hearty. His health improved. And I asked him at the end of the month why he shouldn't quit opium. He said, Now you saw me. I've tried many times. So I said, Well, you have tried for 30 days. I haven't given you opium. What? I said, come along. In my room was a big dough and some ink. I made it even darker, and all I was feeding him was a lump of dough which had some ink in it. But my suggestion was so strong that he said that it was the best brand of opium that he had ever tasted. After 30 days, he was frothing again and going into paroxysms. I said, now you know that your subconscious mind is doing. You didn't do it for 30 days. Get up, I said, get up. And when I said that fiery thought, he was all right. He never went back to opium again. There was in Washington, D.C., a lady came to me. I gave lots of healing when I used to travel, and now I believe more in giving healing of the soul. The healing of the body people forget. Healing of the soul is most important. I also give healing of the body. But the idea is this lady, she said that she had chronic indigestion. She couldn't get well. I said that this is the worst of everything that you have said. Because if you are 50 years well, and you get sick for a few days, you say, oh, this is nothing. Then you get sick for 1 month and you begin to doubt. My, this disease is going to take a permanent lease on me. When you are sick for 6 months, you say, I can't get well. For 6 months of disease, you forget 50 years of well-being. So that's the time when you require the help of somebody wise with a strong mind, who will inject that mind and reverse all the forces and increase your life force. It is the life that heals. When you are morose and feel that you are sick, life is low, and it cannot burn the bacteria and the toxins. But when somebody else, by suggestion, brings that life again through your will, it heals. So I told this lady that when she said that she couldn't get well, I said, by the time you walk out of the house, you will be well. She said, yes, yes. Many have told me, but it didn't work. I said, but it is going to work this time. So I concentrated, and I knew that she must have some emotional complex. So I said that you have had some great emotional outbursts, a very sad love affair. She said, that's right. Isn't it hanging like a stone around your heart? After all these years, she said, yes. I said, why are you so foolish? He is having a good time with some other woman, while you are bothering about him and creating this heart disease and your stomach problem. Your heart is so weighted down, and your stomach nerves cannot get the light. It is true, I said. You give up that thought, and you will never be sick. So I gave her healing, and she never had a single spell of indigestion again. She had been going from specialist to specialist. Mind can heal. Remember this now. The last thing which I'm going to tell is to establish your identity with God. God certainly has no sickness, has he? He is a perfect being. Now, Bible says that you are made in his image. All the scriptures say you are made in his image. And how do you know that you are made in his image? Certainly, when you look in the mirror, you can't see the image of God, but the image of age and worries and all the difficulties that you have revealed in your eyes and in your brain grooves and your whole makeup. How are you going to forget these things? Think as little of the body as you can. Give it to God. Don't be afraid. When he will take it away, no one can save you. And when he can keep it, no one can kill you. When all the ashes were spread over Pompeii, there was one prisoner who was alive. Everybody was dead. He was excavated and brought out of his tomb. Strange are the ways of God, but you must trust in the Maker. Because remember, you don't know how this heart pumps that has been wound once and remains for 60 or 100 years, and why it is ticking. And on it ticks your life depends. Then you should be worried at all? When it suddenly stops beating, you will be dead. Why should you doubt? Why should you think that so many material things are necessary because God has deluded you in a certain way to think that you have to depend on food? Just eat casually. Eat the right things which you think are correct. or which science has discovered. But forget it. Don't dwell on it. Don't dwell on food. Your life is more important than food. But neither dwell on mental fears. Depend on God. Just say, my heart is ticking because of you, and you must stick to it. That is the intuitive method of healing. That is the presence of infinity. That you are with me. Why should I think of the body when I don't know how the food is digested and converted into blood plasma? And why should I worry about it? Why should I disbelieve you? Just because of my karma, I have been suffering. What of that? I give this body in your charge. You will see a different body. You will see a different light. It is partly for the good desire. Why should you depend on a little woman who knows nothing of mental science? She says hocus pocus and you are all right. All she does is to reinforce your mind. When she fails, when she doesn't heal you, then your disease remains. So go back to the source that cannot fail, God. When you doubt him, you doubt everybody. It is his law that you are working. The scientist, the chiropractor, the mental healer are working his laws. Why don't you go back to the lawmaker? How? Feel intuitively. He is with me. Never doubt him. Right in my heart, throb thou art. Right behind my speech, thou art speaking. Right behind my feeling, thou art feeling. Right behind my blood, thou art coursing. Right behind my life, thou eternal light. That is so much safer, so much happier, so much simpler. And when disease comes, all the more you must cling to him. If your mind says that you should take a little medicine or you should go to a mental healer, do it. All the time say, Lord, thou help thou my unbelief until I can completely give this body in your charge. You have given me common sense. I have to use it. Say, Lord, I believe in thee. I fully believe thou art the greatest healer. And as soon as I realize my identity with thee, I cannot have any disease. I cannot have any suffering. So you see the story of the lioness. She was big with child, and it became harder and harder for her to procure food. So one day she was on the outskirts of a forest. She saw a flock of sheep, and when she gave a jump, she gave birth to the lion, which lived with the sheep, and the lioness went away with one sheep. But this little lion grew up with the sheep into a huge, big lion with mane and claws, but it had all the characteristics of a sheep. Instead of roaring, it bleated. Instead of eating meat, it ate grass. And always when a wild animal came, this big lion fled with the sheep. So one day another lion spied this flock of sheep in which this sheep lion had grown. All the sheep were flying, and to his astonishment, he began to scratch his head. Well, I can't understand the sheep. I can understand the sheep flying, but I can't understand that full-grown lion with his tail high in the air should fly away from me. That lion seems to interest me. So he raced very fast and jumped on the lion. All the sheep fled, and this lion would bleat with his eyes closed. He said, please don't kill me. I'm a little sheep. The lion says, you are not a sheep. What's the matter? Open your eyes. No, please let me go. I'm a little sheep. So the lion again scratched his head and thought, this is only part of my story, you know. So he grabbed the lion by the mane and dragged him until his whole face reflected in the water. But still the sheep lion had his eyes closed. So the other lion said, come on, come on, open your eyes, look at me. The sheep lion opened his eyes. He said, look at my face and look at your face. Your face is like mine, but still you bleat. So he said, now roar. But he still was bleating. Then after a little while, he roared. Now everybody say, I will roar. Say it. Come on. Now say, I will roar with the power of God. That's better. Remember, you are the Lion of God. You are made in his image. but you have got into the sheep clothes of mortal beings who complains of sickness and all kinds of diseases. That's why you are bleeding, bleeding with troubles and weaknesses. Self-realization teachings are the lion teachings that will give you a good shaking and will take you to the crystal pool of introspection and intuition, which will show you that you are not immortal. Isn't that wonderful? That was a long reading, but it's so wonderful to read Master's original words. As you can tell, there are times when he had unusual ways of saying things. It's unfortunate, I think, that in the current day transcripts that we get that have been turned into books, that his writings have been changed, and it takes away the charm and the peculiar way that he had with the English language. Mother said that sometimes that he just spoke beautifully in English, and sometimes he just murdered the king's English. But she said even when he did so, that there was meaning that came out, and even when he reversed words or had an unusual way of saying things, that oftentimes there's a wonderful meaning in that, and sometimes a double meaning on the words. So you see, those who have minds that are not fully realized cannot judge a master. And even seeming mistakes that come out are actually there to teach the student and the disciple something about themselves. The thing is this, is to tune your mind into the spiritual teacher. This means to focus your attention on that inner vibration, on that inner feeling that you get when you're in the teacher's presence. And this is not limited just to when the teacher or the guru is in your presence, but it is something that you can have all the time. For there is no such thing as time or space in the Spirit of God. My guru, who died many years ago now, is a living presence for me, as well as many of the other masters who come and touch my consciousness at different times. And sometimes their presence is as real or more real than meeting anyone on the physical plane. Because there is no separation at the time of death, there is no separation even in life, if we would but realize it. When I first met Mother, I was living in Seattle, and then I moved away in order to take a job. And during that time, I focused on her inwardly. I remembered what it was like to be in her presence. I felt that presence in me. And I was doing a lot of traveling on the road at that time, and so I would be chanting to God and thinking about Mother, and I would tune in and I would feel that presence. Eventually, I moved back to the Seattle area, and I had more week-to-week contact with her. And what I discovered was that that inner contact was so terrific and so strong that it served me all the time, and it wasn't necessary for me to be in her presence all the time in order to have it. But rather, it is something that was more universal than that. It transcended the space that separated us. It transcended the time. There was a time when I traveled to Europe and to Africa in order to travel. And when I was in Marrakesh, Morocco, I was walking the streets there, and Mother wore a perfume. I believe the name of it was White Lilac. And it had a very distinctive fragrance to it. And as I walked those desert streets, I smelled that perfume just as real as if she'd been standing next to me. And I marveled at that, and it lasted for several minutes. And it was a wonderful thing, and it brought her presence so close and so near. There was one rather kind of amazing experience to me. It's difficult to describe, but I was driving on the way to a talk that she was going to give. And on my way there, I owned a Volkswagen van at the time, and I was driving it down the street. And a car in front of me stopped very suddenly. and I applied the brakes, but I went into a skid, and I was certain that I was going to rear-end the car. And I was within inches of it, and I was still going a fairly good speed. And it was as if someone had edited the film, and suddenly I jumped back, the whole car jumped back a few more feet, and there I was at a place where I had been. And I was still skidding, and I came to a stop just inches from the other person's bumper. Now, that may be hard to believe for some, but it was an actual experience. And so these things can come to us at the time, either consciously or unconsciously. That presence, that consciousness can protect us. It can uplift us. It can charge and change this body in a brand new way. It can lift you out of sickness and illness. And even if the sickness stays with you, if you keep your mind directly on it, you may still have to go through that illness. But you will feel that presence all the way through. And that presence will give you comfort. You know, there are times when we just have to work out karmic debts through our body. And because of that, there is a certain amount of suffering that comes. But when we identify exclusively with this body, and we don't identify with the Spirit of God, then we continue to promote attachment to this body. And because of that, we continue to accrue karma in a negative way towards this body. When we can tune in to the Spirit of God, then that transcends any attachment to the body. As our attachment gets more and more firmly fixed on the divine presence within us, then those negative desires, those negative impacts of pain or whatever it may be, begin to lessen within the body. And as we tune into that spirit completely, we can be lifted completely out of body consciousness, completely out of pain, completely out of all the difficulties that we're experiencing. Now, fear is a very great enemy on the spiritual path. Don't think that if you experience fear, that you are alone in it. It is the path of every devotee and every human being who has walked this earth. Because we have come to identify with this body, we experience fears about a great many things. And because of that, we get rooted even more deeply in this body. We cling on to it like it is our all and all. The reality is, if we wake up to it, we have this body for maybe perhaps 60 or 70 years, maybe less time, maybe more. But we all leave this body at some time. Therefore, we should not think of having ownership of the body, but we are leasing it. And when this body has worn itself out in service, then we will let it go. And we step out of it, and we let it go like a heavy overcoat. And we step out of it, and when we do that, then we experience an inner release. Because, you know, it's a difficult thing to live in this world. This is what is called the world of samsara, the veil of tears. Because there is, for every pleasure, there is a pain. For every upliftment, there is a downcast. And so it's a difficult place, and it's a proving ground. What is the purpose of having a body and living in this world? The ultimate purpose, we are told, is to realize our oneness with God. Because we have become so imbued with this body, with this world, and the world of the senses, we have come to believe it is first, last, and always. Plato gave an analogy called the cave analogy. And in the cave analogy, pictured there are individuals sitting within the cave and burning behind them is a fire. That fire is casting shadows of their bodies onto the walls. And they look at those shadows and they come to believe those shadows are their selves. That's their world. And they know nothing beyond the cave. But those few ones who become spiritually adventurous get up and move out of the cave. And what they discover is that they've been shadowboxing all this time. They've been looking at this vague reflection of their true selves and have come to believe that those dancing shadows on the wall of the cave was reality. When they moved out into the real world, they saw that there was color, there was wonder, there was upliftment, there was perfection, there was beauty, everything that they had always been yearning for, intuitively feeling, and yet had become convinced that these shadows were the reality and everything else was but a dream. You see, it's a very interesting thing for us to say, this is reality. We hear about movies that are made that show the very grossest aspects of life. That's reality, we are told. Well, it's some individual's reality, but it's not the vast majority of reality. That's not how the vast majority of us live our lives. And so what is reality? The saint experiences this world and feels the presence of God within them and everywhere about them. That's reality for them. They feel the bliss and the joy of God. They feel the wisdom-guided thoughts of God. That is their reality. And to tell them that this world is reality, or these baser aspects of living in this world is reality, they would laugh. They would say, you are deluded. What drugs are you taking? You know? What bus did you get off of? Because you must be fairly new on this path in order to think that that's your reality. Your reality is in your spirit. This body is but a temporary inhabitation. The habits that you build up in this lifetime and that you have carried in from other lifetimes are but temporary things. The attachments that we get, the bindings that we get to this person and that person. The saint looks at this world and sees his beloved or her beloved in everyone, in everything. And so who can be loved more specially than any other? Now, it may appear at times that they take special favor to this one or that, but that's just the play of God. For them, their love equally spreads out over this world. Because it's not dependent upon anybody's specific behavior. So much of what we call love is because somebody gives us pleasure of some kind. They give us a feeling about ourselves. And so we come to think that, well, I love this person because when I'm in their presence, I feel so good. This is a narcissistic love. This is actually being in love with ourselves. We're in love with our own feelings. And it has nothing that goes beyond that. And so this is the very basest kind of love that we can experience. When we enter into a more selfless kind of love, we begin to give and to do things not because it will provide some pleasure for ourselves, but because we realize it is for the highest good of that other individual. And we may not even know what the ultimate results are. In fact, we let go of ultimate results because we know that what is sown deep in the soul may not produce results for years to come. And so to look for immediate results would be an error. We do things because we feel inwardly inspired to do so. Because we are in a divine romance with that spiritual life within ourselves. Now, this may seem like a strange thing when you have not experienced it, that you can have a divine romance right within you. You can feel the power, the presence, the bliss, the reality of this spiritual consciousness from moment to moment, day to day, year to year. You realize that in all human relationships, this is the love that you have been searching for. Through all desire for different kinds of pleasure, this joy, this bliss in God, is the real pleasure you've been looking for. It is the fulfillment of all of your desires. But you know what? We don't believe it. We can't really give it credence. because if we did, we would put ourselves, heart, mind, and soul, 1,000% on the spiritual path in order to achieve that. If we really believed that that was our ultimate fulfillment, we would spare nothing in order to achieve that fullness of consciousness. But we, most of us, are of mixed nature. We believe some in the spirit. We believe some in attaining something spiritual. But we also believe in this world. We also believe that this world can bring us ultimately what we want. But as the Buddha, before he became the Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama discovered, that everything ends in sickness, old age, and death. All of this play ultimately ends. So what is the purpose? This was the great driving need, and he had tremendous compassion for all mankind. Why do this? Why live this life if it all ends someday? Was the driving thought in his own mind. And he could not rid himself of it. He had to find the answer. And so that drive for so many other draws from the world come along, so many other competitions, and habit patterns run strong. Those habit patterns that where we traditionally have gone to find happiness, and sometimes we intellectually know that it is harming us. It's harming our bodies, it's harming our emotions, it's harming our minds, it's harming our souls. And yet we continue on with it. And so what can be the resolution to this? Rather than focus just on what you want to let go of, focus on where you're going. Focus on invoking God's name. Sing to God. Love God. Think of God's attributes of joy, of love, of beauty, of upliftment. Keep your mind focused on there, and no matter what comes, keep your mind focused on the very highest. And through the law of magnetic attraction, you will draw yourself to that which you focus on. If you are withdrawing from something, you're trying to get rid of a habit, and you find that your mind is constantly focused on that habit, even though you are sustaining from it, you are setting it up through the law of attraction to go back into it again. You are making it much more difficult for you. So the thing is to do this, is to stop your attention on whatever it is you're trying to let go of. You can do that, you can use some mental imagery. You can put up a big red and white stop sign mentally in front of that object and say, stop. I don't want to put my mind on that. Or you can mentally put a large X in front of it and just say, stop. And the sooner you do it from when you start thinking about it, the more easy it is to control. If you allow your mind to play with that some, then you start down that path, and it's like a snowball that starts to get larger and more momentum with it, and then it becomes very difficult to stop, and it runs over you when you try to change its course. So don't do that. Learn to identify those thoughts and those attractions very early and stop. But nature abhors a vacuum. So you can't just stay neutral. You have to put your mind onto something positive, something fulfilling, something healthy, something good in your life. So learn to focus on what that is and move towards that. It can be an object, it can be a thought, it can be an image of something that is uplifting and beautiful in your mind. Whatever it is, fulfill it. Fill it with something wonderful. And if every time you say stop to whatever it is that is drawing you and attracting you, and putting it on, it'll challenge you. It'll be quite a struggle. But if you do that every time, you will cut off the life force that you are feeding into that habit. You know, a habit cannot live unless we feed it. And we feed it through our thoughts and our feelings and through body attractions. And so if we feed it, then we ourselves are the one who's giving it power. But if we slowly strangle it by not giving it any thought whatsoever, by not giving it any emotional energy, by not allowing our bodies to react to it, and we do that by controlling our thoughts and diverting the mind onto something good, then we will strangle that out, and it may be quite a battle, but we will be victorious. We will become masters over ourselves, and we will become free of that. And then we develop a positive habit instead. And so develop strategies for yourself to do something positive, something good for body, mind, and soul, and divert your mind off of that which is bothering you. And in this way, you can get control and self-mastery. And this is something that's required in order to have full realization. Because without our ability to do that, then those bad habits will come in and take us over. And we will not be able to keep that going. So the thing is this, if you're struggling with a habit, and you find that this is difficult to do also, then surrender yourself to God. Just say, God, I can't seem to manage this. I can't seem to get it. I've tried everything in my power to change this. And now I bring myself to you completely and thoroughly. You help me with this. You make it possible. I am relying on you completely. And when in all humility you surrender yourself this way towards that infinite consciousness, you open up a gateway for that consciousness, for that grace, for that bliss to come into your being. And you are as a little child. All the openness, all the trust, all the reliance on that spiritual being, that spiritual presence to come in and to change your life. There have been times in these experiences that I've had on this path when it's taken me to the very end of everything that I felt I had to give, and I felt like I could give no more. There was nothing left. And all I could do was hang on to the hem of my guru's robe in my own mind's eye. But this was a wonderful thing, and that's all I could do was hang on to that. So you see, this path takes you to the struggle to the nth degree. It takes everything out of you. And through this, you learn humility. You learn that of myself I am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. And this is the truth. It is the truth for me and for you and for every single person on this planet. Only most have not come to realize it. But that's why we're here, is to realize that. And when we do that, we open up a door wide into spiritual consciousness. But the problem is we're prideful. The problem is we think we can do it. The problem is that we are tenacious in our hanging on to this body and to the senses. The story that I've told many times is of the man who was clinging on to a thorn bush. The thorn bush had white, beautiful flowers and a wonderful fragrance. And he is so attracted and intoxicated by that fragrance and those flowers that he just grabbed onto the thorn bush. And the thorns dug deeply into his flesh, and he cried out in pain, but he also would not let go because he was so attracted to the thorn bush. And so as a saint walked along one day, he said, "Oh, sir, please release me from this thorn bush." The saint said, "Let go, my son, let go of the bush. I will heal your wounds, and we will go together." The man said, "I cannot do that. I cannot let go of the thorn bush. You must release me from it." The saint said, "Let go, my son. I will heal your wounds, and we will go on the path together." The man said, "I cannot do it. You must do it for me." The saint just shook his head and walked on along the path. Let us not be like that foolish man, clinging on to our thorn bushes, but rather let us let go of it and move along on this path in trust at first, in faith, because we don't know what the outcome will be. But I can tell you this, that the experiences will come, and you will come to know the truth of your own being. You will come face to face with that most infinite beloved, that thing that you have most yearned for in the deepest recesses of your soul, that you have always yearned for, is lying deep within you, dormant, latent, but ready to be awakened. And then you can wake up and you can roar like a lion and no longer bleat like a sheep. So I'd just like to stop there and then see if there's any questions for those who are walking this path. If you have a question in your mind, it's likely others have it also. Everybody must be in samadhi bliss. When we're all children, yeah, and we get to sound like them.
What if we were all sitting here and somebody just fainted, keeled over sideways? What's the immediate response? What would you do?
What would I do?
What would we do?
What would we do? In other words, how to respond to somebody when they are ill or suffering in some way? Yeah. Well, as Master said, you use common sense. If somebody knows first aid and has some knowledge around that, then that is used. If a doctor needs to be called, then that's done, or an ambulance of some kind, an aid car. So it's not that you go without common sense or using the laws of science as we've developed it. You know, it's quite wonderful what science has been able to develop around healing, but also that there are limitations to that. When Mother was in India in 1967 and 1968, there was a saint there who left the body and died, and I believe it was for 8 days his body had been stone cold dead. And she had great love for this saint, and the disciples came and asked if she could do something for him. And so she came, and all the disciples were seated around and up in the windows and crowded all around. And the only thing that she knew to do was that she had remembered that Master said that the last thing to go when you are dying is your hearing. And so she went and she started to rub the saint's feet, and she called to him. And as she rubbed his feet and called to him, suddenly he sat bolt up. And he came back to life again. Of course, all the room was ooh and ah at this happening and raising this individual from the dead. And so she followed her own intuition and trusted in the power of God within her and the power of God and her master. And through that, then she was able to raise this man from the dead. Sometimes you feel called. There are times when I've woken up in the middle of the night and I feel directed to pray for some individual, my mind is directed towards them. The other night, about 3:30 in the morning, I woke up, bolt up in my bed, and I just had this terrific fear on me and agitation. And I said, God, what is this that I'm feeling this fear and this agitation? And so I immediately took it to him, and through that he gave a terrific revelation to me regarding the Bible and the relationship between Herod and many of the forces that go on from the very beginning in the spiritual path. Well, the next day I happened to be telling this to a devotee, and they said, well, we were up at 3:30 last night. My daughter woke up in night terrors. And my husband and I were fussing at each other, and we were having a rather bad time of it. And then suddenly this great peace came over us. And, you know, then she somehow related that to me. And whether I was responsible for the peace, that was her opinion. I don't know anything about that. I just know what my experience was around it. So sometimes these things come automatically to you. You feel called to pray for somebody. Perhaps even God will give you something to take on for that individual. Sometimes this can be the case when somebody has had some degree of realization, because they are like a strong individual who can help others who are struggling along when they're having difficulties. And so this often seems to be the case where I will have some kind of experiences and it relates to what somebody else is going through. One time I was driving down the road and I was just burning up with this terrific kundalini heat, and the thought of a person, specific individual, came into my mind. And so I called them on the phone and I said, put some ice on your head. You're burning me up. And they said, but I was enjoying the heat. I said, well, I'm getting the overflow, so put some ice on it. So this is the way that it happens sometimes. But we don't lose our practicality around this. If we are ill and if we're having difficulties, then we use whatever resources are presented to us. But the greatest resource that we have is the one that is right inside of ourselves, that spirit of God, that spiritual consciousness that resides right within us. And so we use whatever practical aids that we have, but we also go deep within. We forget this body. We forget whatever is wrong with it. And we enter into that inner temple. We shut the doors tight. And then we feel the peace and the presence and the power of that consciousness. And when we touch that, that is the greatest healing power that any one of us can have. And so we use everything at our disposal. But that's the greatest thing.
Is it possible that in the process of working, that some things may express themselves in physical weakness?
In the process of working, in what way?
And you find that your keeping have some physical problems that you might have before. Is it possible if there's any relationship
between the kriya and having physical problems? Probably not. If the physical problems, sometimes what can happen is that it can accelerate your evolution. And because of that, but kriya really should bring you peace. It should bring you calm. It should put you more in touch with the power and the beauty of God. God, in his absolute expression, without any physical manifestation, is that perfection of consciousness. And so in that state, there is no disease or dis-ease. there is only peace, and there is only that perfection that's there. So the more you touch in with that, the more likely it is to manifest in your body. The more likely it is that you are to experience health and well-being. Now, this isn't always the case. It depends on an individual's karma. Sister Gyanamata, who is a very highly realized soul of masters, was ill for most of her adult life. And even living with Master and being down and near his presence all the time, she still experienced great illness. Now, there's two reasons for this. One is that a saint is burning off their own karma, whatever is left of it. The other is that they're helping by taking on the karma of the world. In other words, they can stand in the way if someone, because of a karmic law, were going to hit you in the jaw, and a saint stood in front of you and took the blow for you, so that you could keep your mind more clearly and directly on God and make spiritual advancement, and they would take that blow, then that's something that they can do. But it's not something that they do of their own volition. It's something that God gives to them. And so it's not that we should pray to take on somebody else's illness, particularly when we have not achieved our full realization, because that distracts the mind then. We can pray for other individuals, but really we should leave that other alone. But if God sees it fit, then he may give us some portion of that, or the whole blow. And that's to help that one to advance. So that perfection comes into your being, and that's what starts creating health, both mentally and emotionally and physically. So that kriya will not create disease. Now, if it's related to spiritual experiences, which sometimes can be difficult, sometimes painful, the rising of the kundalini, the things that we go through, it can put us through really very difficult experiences. And that's a different matter. That's a different kind of dis-ease. That's a one that's a working out of the inharmonies of this body in order to get perfection within this body and the mind and the spirit. But the kriya, the short answer is no. Kriya would not create any kind of illness in you. Not as long as you're practicing it as you've been taught. Also, when you practice kriya, you attract the blessings of the masters of this line of gurus. When you think about it, the nature of the masters of this line of teachers, it's terrific. It's, you know, many of us starting on the spiritual path, we might be happy to be on Little League team, and here we find ourselves in the Super Bowl, you know, maybe carrying water, but these spiritual giants that are in this lineage are so terrific, so tremendous, so powerful in God that we are terrifically fortunate in having attracted the blessings of such great masters. And we attract those blessings every time we put our mind on God, every time we keep our mind on the masters. And these masters, even though they are no longer in the body, they can come to us through vision, through a feeling of presence, through their consciousness touching on ours. And it's a wonderful thing. It's not like they take us over. This is not, what do they call it, channeling or anything like that. But we feel that presence, and it quickens our spirit. It uplifts us, and it takes us closer to that one spiritual consciousness. So it's a wonderful thing when we get these blessings. And it can tremendously accelerate our evolution from this human consciousness to the divine.
Mm-hmm. With regards to bad habits, I hear you saying, put up a stop sign, mm-hmm. and don't nurture the idea, don't let it snowball.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me the nature of the mind, as with regards to a habit, is it twists and justifies,
yes.
and minimizes,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and says, oh, you know, let's just do it.
Yeah.
You know, and
that little devil whispering in your ear.
And it seems like lack of power is the dilemma. And
lack of power in yourself.
Lack of power over the habit.
Uh huh.
You know, just it's become such a habit.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, the moment it would click in, that it would it takes you
mm-hmm.
really defenseless. And it would seem to me that the spiritual aspect would be the only recourse, providing it was sufficient enough, that you had sufficient enough faith to believe in it. Otherwise, you'd be a goner.
Yeah. And sometimes in that development, we slip and we have faults. And the thing is not to really beat ourselves up for that or spend a lot of time and a lot of remorse. It's good to say, I've made an error here and I need to move on. But if we just spend all of our time in remorse, we're really keeping our mind on that which we want to get rid of. Our mind is really focused there. So that in itself is a trap. I think that if you analyzed the steps carefully, you would probably see by the time it felt out of control, you had already been playing with the concept or the thought or the temptation for a while. Now, maybe just barely underneath the surface of the conscious mind. There may be ways that you're touching in on it. But there's ways that we can, oh, it's comfortable, or there's a fascination about it, or whatever that draws the mind in that way. By the time that it gets into this kind of overwhelming kind of taking us over, we probably have had it going on for a little while. We may be fooling ourselves about that. So it's good to really take a careful analysis and find out, when did I first start thinking? When did I start feeling the pull towards this? And the reality is it probably started before that. But even by the time that it is taking you over, so to speak, with a tremendous act of will, you can just say, stop. And stop that forward momentum that has started inside of you. Tell you something very personal about my own journey. Early on, I met Mother when I was in my young 20s and I was unmarried, and sexuality was running very strong in me. And of course, one of Mother's rules was no sex without marriage, as well as no drugs, no smoking, and no drinking alcohol. And so, you know, I would really struggle with this. And even in my dreams, sometimes when I felt, you know, unprotected around that. And I even had a dream image that I called the temptress. And actually, she was kind of grotesque. She wore heavy makeup and things that normally I was not overly attracted to, in an almost grotesque kind of a way. And I would feel myself walking down the path. This imagery doesn't need too much interpretation. And there she would be off on the side of the path. And I'd feel myself being drawn to her with desire. And that happened consistently and often enough that I was able to somehow wake up in the dream, realize and just say, stop. And I would just almost scream it in my own mind in order to pull myself back and get back onto the path. And so it's a very, and sexual desire is one of the most difficult things in the entire world to try to have mastery over. But gradually, as these experiences came then with Kundalini and the uplifting, came some relief from all of that, and this transmutation process started. But still, it was the recognition of starting very early, when those thoughts first started coming to me, or those feelings. And as with so many temptations and so many desires, if the sex thought comes, and it comes through an image or it comes through thinking about a particular person, and then that thought stimulates the hormonal reactions in the body. And then those hormonal reactions reinforce the thought process, and then you get into a feedback loop. And so the only way to stop that then is to stop the thought process. And so as soon as we can, then we stop that, and we replace that with a different thought. And if we do that early on, it's surprising how much easier the temptation is to respond to. If we wait for that to build, then it gets much more difficult. But I think because we have the power of God within us, that if we call on that, even if we're far down the road, if we call on that in sincerity and with every ounce of will in ourselves, then it will respond and it will allow us to overcome it. But the biggest problem is we're making up this mixed nature, and some of us is drawn towards it, some of us wants to overcome it. It's getting that absolute clarity of what it is that we want. Identifying that purposefulness, that intention, and holding that clearly will save us lots of trouble down the road. It's the back and forth nature of our minds that keep us in a constant state of turmoil. I think when you look at the lives of these great saints like Master Yogananda, Swami Ramdas, Mother Hamilton, they had such intense desire for God and for God realization. And that really was their genius, was that they were able to focus their minds on that. That became their consuming passion. And it's not to say that other things didn't come up, that they didn't have struggles, but they became firmly fixed on that idea, that that's what they wanted more than anything else. Master used to say, a saint is a sinner who never gave up. And so we all start out with that mixed nature. But the spiritual path is made up of becoming more and more refined and focused on what it is that we want. And when we realize more than anything else, we want this spiritual consciousness, we want God, then the path can be very short.
Mm-hmm. Would you speak about distractions during meditation and how to keep the focus constant?
Mm-hmm.
And also how to carry that focus after formal meditation,
mm-hmm.
in your daily life.
Yeah. Well, even Krishna said that disciplining the mind is difficult. So, you know, it's an act of repetition and being mindful that things will draw our attention away. There'll be a noise outside. Our knee will hurt. Different thoughts will come up, and suddenly we'll be clear across the universe someplace in our own thoughts in a split second. And so one way is to, when you get the feeling of the presence inside of you, focus in on that feeling. Because when you feel love, when you feel that positive attraction, then it's very easy to keep the mind focused there. You know, if it's a hot day and you really want an ice cream cone, and you decide to walk to the store to get that ice cream cone, it's not too hard to keep your mind on that ice cream cone. It just follows you the whole way there. And so when you feel the presence of God, it's sweet. It's pleasurable. It has joy. It has bliss in it. And when you feel that, your mind is easily attracted and drawn to it. So as you cultivate that feeling, as you learn to have it within you, then that's the greatest draw. And that is what Sri Yukteswar called the state of bhakti or devotional yoga. That positive attraction towards those spiritual qualities. And it's enjoyable, it's blissful, it's joyful, it's wonderful, it's beautiful, it's everything. And so you keep your mind attached to that. Now, in the beginning, you may meditate and experience some peace, some of that joy. And the moment you get up, you feel your mind drawn out to all the outside attractions. Suddenly, your mind is running what you're going to do that day, what you're going to eat, and everything else except for that joy. And all of a sudden, you find you lose it. And perhaps anxiety takes you over rather than the joy and the peace from that. So hold a space. And by that I mean sometimes you can use imagery. You can just see an aura around you and fill that aura with that presence, with that peace, and carry it with you. In the practice of Zen, they become extremely mindful of whatever it is that they're doing. So bring that presence of God into your mindfulness. And if it's washing your face, or taking a shower, or eating your breakfast after you've meditated, take your mindfulness to that. Don't become so absorbed in the object of your attention that you have forgotten that presence. But carry that presence with you. And if you're not experiencing that presence, then just stay focused on the Hong Sa technique, or just practicing that sense of peace. And allow yourself become a walking, a moving meditation. And it's quite wonderful. You can transform the most ordinary task, from washing the dishes to cleaning the toilet to walking down the street, into a moving meditation. And you can sense and feel that presence. You can observe and see the beauty all around you. Allow that beauty to absorb into. If you see some beautiful flowers, take that beauty inside of you. When you move into your work world, see it as an act of service. That every person that you're going to see, everything that you do is an act of service towards God within that one or within the world. Now, so much happens when we get caught up into the sense of doership. I am not doing this right, or maybe I'll be called up short on doing this in this particular way. Or, you know, all those anxieties and angst start to work on us. Let those go. When you identify them, let them off to the side. Reestablish who and what you truly are. Whatever happens on the outside, whether you attract criticism or praise, it doesn't affect who you are. Not really. Not in the total sense. It's always nice to hear compliments, but it's always possible to get the other side of it. Nobody escapes this world without getting both sides. So don't be overly sad at getting something that you might consider negative. Don't be overly happy at getting something positive. Rather, take it in stride and stay focused on that presence. You will feel such great joy welling up in your being that you will not be able to contain it all. It will just spill out of you. And so this is the greatest thing. And this is the greatest thing in our lives. So we don't overly attach ourselves to anything on the outside, but we stay focused on that presence and then allow that presence to move through us. And if we do that, then intuitive wisdom thoughts will come to us. Stay focused on the heart and allow your actions and your thoughts and your movements be as a result of the love that moves through you. You see, there's a saying that God is simple, all else is complex. God is right behind your own breath. He's residing right behind your own thoughts. He's residing right behind your own feelings. He is closer than you can imagine. He is nearer and dearer than you can imagine. So don't imagine God to be distant and foreign and disapproving and some antiseptic corner of the cosmos that's handing out judgments and lightning bolts and, you know, all the rest of it, tornadoes, plagues, you know, all these images that we've been sold on. Think of God as the most intimate that you could have. And cultivate that. Bring that beauty forward. That is God, and that is God realization, is to have that presence with you always. In whatever place you find yourself, in life or in death. What is death but a letting go of the body and moving into a greater life? But really, it's not even necessarily a greater life. All the greatness resides in you right now, because God is with you now. And this world will be turned into a Garden of Eden, because you will see the presence of God everywhere. First you discover God within you, and then you see Him everywhere about you. And this is the way that it is.